I'm Carlos Collazo here with Philip, co-editor Brad Roland. Brad, how you doing?
Doing well, man. Excited to talk.
Yeah, me too. Same here. So in this edition of the podcast, Brad and I were going to talk about the Atlanta Hawks free agency, possible targets, rumors that have been going on, the Dwight Howard talk, I'm guessing, and briefly talk about the Braves. The Braves had a good game tonight, but I think most of the information we're going to discuss is Hawks related. But yeah, Brad, just general thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, obviously, it's kind of busy in general. The Hawks getting fired up with free agency. I guess the main storylines haven't really been about the Hawks, but sort of been around the periphery of the Hawks, which makes it interesting and kind of frustrating at the same time.
Yeah, I feel like all the big rumors with Dwight Howard and Andre Iguodala, it's all, they list the teams they're interested in. Rockets, like, everyone's big on the Rockets this offseason, and then they're like, oh, and also the Hawks. So I feel like the Rockets are the big craze this season. What do you think about that?
Yeah,
I mean, even Josh Smith, he was linked to the Rockets too. So they want to do something big this offseason. That's clear.
It's kind of typical Hawks. Like, we have all this money and we have the big market, but everyone's going to kind of use us as leverage to move to other places. That's what normally happens. The Hawks met with Dwight Howard today, so at least they got the meeting with Dwight Howard. He's from here, which probably helps. But normally the Hawks don't even get the meeting with that kind of guy. So that's a small step in the right direction. But
gotcha, let's go in. What's the big draw with the Rockets? I mean, it's not like they're any better than the Hawks, or were they this past season?
They were about the same. It's just it's that Houston's got. You got no state tax in Texas. You got a young, flashy star in James Harden, and they have cap room like we do. Plus they don't really have the stigma of Atlanta. Like, the Hawks are kind of a stigma franchise that no one necessarily wants to go to, whereas Houston's won titles in the past, and they're kind of this. They're a lot more flashy than the Hawks are at the moment.
Gotcha. So until we get the first one, it's going to be rough, I'm guessing, as far as drawing in free agents. But we've got a ton of money, so I'm kind of excited to see what they do with all that money, considering we only have three players under contract right now, unless you count the new draft picks. And actually, we should probably talk about those guys, because that was pretty recently, and we haven't had a podcast. My first impressions on the first round, at least, were not that good. I don't know if you guys were in the live chat we were doing on the site, but I really wanted to draft the Yang guy. I don't know how you say his name.
Gorgui Jang. Yeah.
And who's the other guy? I already forgot his name. Franklin. The Franklin guy.
Jamal Franklin.
And yeah, Brad knows what he's talking about with these guys. But I really wanted to see them. But after reading what Brad said about Schroeder and the Lucas guy from Brazil, I'm pretty excited. Yeah,
Nogueira.
He's got cool hair, so I guess I can get on board with that. But yeah. Talk about a little bit about what you think about these guys and what they're going to bring to the table, and really what they can offer the Hawks next year.
Yeah, so the draft was pretty interesting. There was, in general, I kind of like what Danny Ferry did. He kind of went off the board. I mean, even the so-called experts kind of had no idea where he was going to go, and that's how it worked out. Like you said, we talked a lot about Jamal Franklin, and he actually ended up falling to, I think, 41, which I couldn't believe. But
yeah,
the guys that we actually
got, we
almost got him at 44. But the guys we actually got, Lucas Nogueira, super athletic, 7-foot center. He was supposed to go ahead of where we were picking. We moved up one spot to get him, but he's definitely a project. I think he averaged like 6 points a game last year in Madrid in the Spanish league. So he's like one of those ultra high upside, really young, athletic guys that may not be. I doubt he's going to contribute next year as anything more than a bench piece. If he even comes over, that's still up in the air too. Dennis Schroeder is the point guard we got from. He's actually a German guy. He's probably a little bit closer to contributing in the NBA from everything that we hear, but he's still, I think he's 20 years old. And there's also some debate about whether he's going to come over too. He seems to want to come over. He's already been over. He's going to be in summer league with our second round pick, Mike Muscala. They both are committed to summer league.
Yeah, Muscala. I was really impressed with what I read about Muscala. He seems like a really well-rounded type guy. That's just a good kind of bench player for the team, I guess.
Yeah, that was the guy I wanted a lot. I even wrote about it beforehand as a second round target. I really wanted Muscala. I mean, that's not a guy with any real upside, but he's a 4-year player from Bucknell who could. I mean, he could probably help the Hawks this year, which is rare in the second round. He makes the team. He's already really polished and kind of an efficient guy, not flashy, but he could be solid off the bench if necessary.
Very cool. And where do they see Nogueira? How do you say that?
I think it's Nogueira.
Nogueira, okay. Do they see him being more of a defensive player, an offensive player, or do they really, with his high upside, do they think he can contribute at a high level on both sides?
Yeah, I mean, from what I understand, I mean, I've seen some YouTube stuff on him. I've seen some really select amount of stuff on him, but he's supposed to be just a super athlete, defensive rebounding guy. So block shots, rebounds. I don't think he'll ever be a really polished offensive player as raw as he is now. I can't imagine him being a dump it into the post kind of guy. But think like Serge Ibaka type of guy.
Yeah, he did. He said he wanted to model this game after. Did he say Serge Ibaka? I said two guys. It might have been some other guy. I'm not sure. He said he wanted to model this game after. Maybe Ibaka is not the guy at all, but I know they were interviewing him after and said some really good defensive player. You know who I'm referring to? Or
I can't remember.
All right.
No, but it's even Danny Ferry on draft night was talking about how they wanted to be a rim protector. That's kind of the in vogue thing in the NBA right now, is to have these big athletic guys that can protect the rim. And Al Horford's fantastic on team defense and things, but he's not really a block shot guy.
Yeah.
So putting a big block shot blocker next to him will be good down the line if Vera pans out.
And it seems like, you know, some of the Peachtree Hoops guys were talking about how the team mentality is going to be defense and 3-point shooting. Is that correct? I know they're big on defense going into the draft. Because Schroeder's supposed to be good on defense too.
I was going
to
say the focus. We kind of didn't know where they were going to go, as we talked about. But with these two picks, these are both really long, athletic. They went long and athletic and defense oriented, from what it seems like. And Schroeder, I mean, has incredible length. I think he's only 6'2", but he's got like a 6'9" wingspan, which is incredible for a point guard. And a lot of Rajon Rondo comparisons there, just like body type and that kind of stuff. So that's pretty encouraging.
Yeah. Do you think if Schroeder was to come over, do you think he would provide the Hawks with a good starting point guard? Do you think he would start, come off the bench? Do you think they would pair him up with Jeff Teague if he's come back? What do you think about that point guard?
Yeah, he's probably a year or two away from real minutes. I mean, he could be in a backup role this year, but it's really all kind of up in the air with free agency. I can't imagine the Hawks going into the year without a proven point guard, whether it's Teague or Brandon Jennings or Jose Calderon or any of those guys. I feel like the Hawks are almost 100% going to sign a, quote, proven starting point guard. So that way, if Schroeder comes over, he'll be a backup at best and just kind of be a project guy for this year.
All right, very cool. And speaking of Brandon Jennings, I know you had some opinions on him.
I'm not a big fan.
Has the Josh Smith shooting mentality.
Yeah, and it's kind of in vogue right now. He actually tweeted out tonight that he's actually in Atlanta. He didn't say he was meeting with the Hawks, but he said he's in Atlanta, so everyone thinks he's going to meet with the Hawks tomorrow. Jennings is one of those shoot-first point guards, but he shoots a terrible percentage from the field. which always drives me crazy. He's a career 39% field. That's not threes, that's from the field, which is really, really bad. He's actually okay from three, about 35% from three, but he's definitely a pure scorer, and I'm not sure how that would fit with Lou Williams. They're really both similar size, score first, sort of combo guards. I'm not sure you want those two guys next to each other, but Jennings is the default number two point guard on the market behind Paul, so...
Let's have the Rockets take him up as all the other players they're going to get.
Yeah, I'd love for Jennings to sign elsewhere. Not a fan myself.
Yeah, and just last thing on the point guard discussion. What do you think the odds offered him? The minimum contract they could have offered him?
Say that one more time, sorry. I lost that.
Jeff Teague, do you think the Hawks bring him back? Or do you think the odds are?
Yeah, we offered him the qualifying offer to keep him restricted, just for the non-NBA diehards. Basically, the Hawks have the ability to match any offer that he gets from somewhere else, which is good leverage for the Hawks. Normally, when people do that, they kind of let the guy sign somewhere else to kind of gauge his market and then decide if they want to match. That's what I would expect to happen with the Hawks and Teague.
That's extremely good leverage.
Yeah, and there's rumors that he could be on his way to Milwaukee to meet up
with Larry Drew,
which wouldn't be too big. I mean, it wouldn't be a surprise to see Milwaukee sign him. I don't think Brandon Jennings is going to go back to Milwaukee, so they have a point guard need. But as far as Teague's concerned, I would definitely not mind having him back. It's really a matter of money. You don't want to overpay for a guy like Teague who's limited in upside. I think he's probably like a $7 or $8 million player in my mind. So if he goes out and gets 10 or 11 from somebody, that's not something I'm going to want to match. But we definitely need a starting point guard, and I'd rather have Teague than Jennings. So
yeah,
that tells you anything.
That seems to be the general consensus of the Hawks guys that I follow on Twitter, and just the articles I've written, or not written, read.
Yeah. But
yeah, it seems like there's a lot still has to fall in free agency before we can actually get concrete news. A lot of it's just rumors right now, and the big guys are probably going to have to fall before we can really find out where the Hawks are going. That seems to be what it's like in this.
It's all going to go off of Dwight Howard, honestly.
Yeah.
Andre Iguodala is kind of the other big name right now besides Josh Smith, and Iguodala seems to be going to Sacramento tonight with a 4-year, $56 million deal. So that's a big domino, but Dwight's really the big one. The Hawks are kind of waiting for him, and if he wants to come, which I don't think will happen, then obviously Danny Ferry will take him. But until he decides, the Hawks are kind of in a holding pattern.
Yeah, and there was also the talk of a sign-and-trade of Josh Smith to the Rockets. What do you think about that? Do you think that's possible? Do you think that's a good move for the plan?
Yeah, it's certainly possible. I can only see that happening if Houston already gets Dwight Howard. Otherwise, Houston will just sign Josh Smith. They wouldn't need to sign-trade for him if they didn't sign Dwight Howard.
And also, the sign-and-trade seems to be definitely just an NBA thing. Can you explain that for
Actually, some things have changed with it in the last collective bargaining agreement, but basically, in order for Smith to get the most money that he could get, he'd have to sign with Atlanta to get the maximum money, and then Houston or any other team would have to trade for him by matching salary if Smith insisted on taking the most amount of money, because Atlanta holds his quote bird rights, which is named after Larry Bird. That allows the Hawks to pay him more than anybody else can pay him.
Okay, so because he came up with the Hawks have the right to give him more money.
Yeah, so whoever is the last team that employed the player has his rights, his extra bird rights too. So for Dwight Howard, it's L.A. The Lakers can give him more money than anybody else can give him. Chris Paul just signed with the Clippers for the most money he could get from anyone, which was from the Clippers. So whoever holds the guy's rights from last season gets to give them more money if they want to.
Gotcha. Okay, see, that makes sense to me. And for those of you out there who aren't NBA fanatics, you're in the same boat as me. And I actually just learned that. Didn't know that. So this is kind of a cool process to go through learning all this NBA talk.
It's definitely the NBA, because of the way that salaries, in order to make trades in the NBA, you have to match up salary. It's the only league in the league of the four that you have to do that in. So the salary cap makes it's very interesting the way they have to do
things.
Seems
like they have a lot more complexities.
Yep.
All right. Very cool. Any other Hawks talk you want to throw out there before we move on to the break?
I guess one more thing. I wrote about it today, but Tiago Splitter was a guy I talked about a lot on the site as a Hawks target, and he actually ended up staying with San Antonio today. So that's one guy off the market for the Hawks as a possible. I'm not terribly surprised that he signed with San Antonio, but that's a guy you can cross off the list of guys we've already talked about on the site. There's still several guys that are outstanding that I wrote up as quote wish list guys. Nikola Petkovic is out there. The two Utah big men are out there. Tyreke Evans is rumored to go to New Orleans, but he hasn't signed yet. So there's still some guys that the Hawks could target if we don't get Dwight Howard.
Yeah.
And the Josh Smith news, obviously. We're going to follow Josh Smith because he's not out of our lives quite yet.
Yeah. So assuming Dwight Howard does not come to Atlanta, and with the Splitter deal, who is your number one big man target at this point?
As far as bigs, probably the best player left is Nikola Petkovic from Minnesota. He's another restricted free agent, so Minnesota could match any deal that the Hawks gave him, which gives it a bit of a challenge.
There's him. Kind of pay over a little bit.
Yeah, to overpay a little bit. So between Petkovic and Al Jefferson of Utah, those are probably your two best, quote, centers. Or the Hawks could go in a different direction and leave Al Horford at center and kind of fill around that.
Yeah, apparently the Bobcats are really big in on Jefferson.
They're in on Jefferson, yeah. It's really quite difficult to project at this point. I know that's it's kind of a cop out, but because of the fact that the Hawks don't have a full roster, they're probably the hardest team to project right now in the whole NBA. Just because
so
they
many
have,
directions.
Yeah, you really only have three guaranteed guys for next year, plus the two first round picks. But the two first round picks may not even come over this year, so it's really quite up in the air. It's a very unique situation.
Yeah, it's very going to be very interesting to follow throughout the offseason for sure. All right, so Braves. Everyone is big on the Braves now after the win today against the Marlins. It's really funny, I think. Before we get to talk about the actual Braves, I think the Braves Twitter following is the most hilarious and annoying and just strange following of any team.
It certainly
has
is.
To be, because we'll lose close game to a good team because of some bad play, and people will freak out and talk about how bad the Braves are and how lucky we are that the Nationals are playing terribly and how bad the manager Freddy Gonzalez is. And then after a game like today, people are huge on the team talking about how we have the division in the bag and how our offense is fantastic after ragging on them the past week every day. And it's just frustrating but entertaining at the same time, because you have to learn that it's just one game. It does not matter. If we lost that game, it really didn't matter. And
I think it's a baseball issue across the board. There's so many games that you can't take things off of one game in baseball. It's the one sport where you just have to have patience at all times, because one out of 162 doesn't mean anything. Barring injury, nothing that happens in a one-game sample means really much at all.
Literally the worst thing that could have happened, or the biggest impact from today's game could be DJ Upton's forearm.
Certainly.
And that doesn't even seem like a good deal at this point. But it was good to see, I guess. It's nice to see Jason Hayward really hitting the ball well, and Justin Upton had a really good night. He went like hit three hits. I don't know if he was 3 for 5 or 3 for 4.
3 for 4 with a walk. Okay. Too.
Yeah, he went 3 for 4 and he had three hits. And like a lot of guys were pointing out on Twitter, it was on three fastballs. And throughout up and slumped. He's been really missing the fastballs, and that worried a lot of people, but it was good to see him get those hits today, including the triple.
Yeah, I was going to say, good to see a triple. Yeah.
And you were there, Brad was there, for anyone who doesn't know. Again, Brad going to all these Braves games. But.
Yeah, I was. It was really, I mean, it's kind of a, it was, well, not even kind of, it was a really ugly game back and forth, but the Braves kind of just blew it open late with, against the terrible Marlins bullpen. Kevin Slowey kind of had an implosion. But it was good to see the offense kind of get going again. I know we say that all the time when after they get shut out a couple times in a row.
Yeah.
But they've been hot for about a week now, which is good.
Yeah, they've been really good. And the Giants got no hit today. The Nationals lost and the Braves won. So I was pretty happy.
Yeah, leads up to 7 as we speak right now, which is great.
7 games. It's huge. Actually, I think people are already bringing out magic numbers for the Braves, I think, earlier. I don't know if I
which
saw
is outrageous.
One, yeah, people, like I said, they're riding the high. And the most interesting piece of news today that I saw was the Jabba Chamberlain news, which I absolutely hated. I know if you guys haven't read that, it's going to be in the link dump tomorrow, but somewhere, I don't know who reported this originally. I'll check it out, but
I think it was the New York Post, because Eric wrote something about it today, real quick on the site, kind of his first, his first post even, kind of same thing as you feel the same way you do, just kind of shooting it down, and even the AJC's Dave O'Brien today was even tweeting about how we talked to several people and kind of seemed like it wasn't in any way in a minute.
Yeah, it was the New York Post. You're right, because apparently a Braves scout was watching Jabba Chamberlain. He might not have even been watching Jabba Chamberlain, but the report said that the scout was there just to watch Jabba Chamberlain, which I find really weird because the Braves bullpen has been lights out this year. I know people were freaking out about it early in the season, and rightfully so when you have Eric O'Flaherty and Johnny Venders go down. But really, they've been awesome. I mean, Kimbrel's been lights out. I think Jordan Walden's been solid. There's some people that aren't big on Jordan Walden.
He's been really good.
But I like Jordan Walden. And then got Alex Wood, Luis Avalon, and then Barbaro. Barbaro, I think, is the most inconsistent. But I think we've got a pretty solid bullpen. And I really don't think there's anything to gain from trading for Jabba Chamberlain. We've got other holes that we could fill more efficiently. Jabba's got his injury history, and he's a rental. He's gone after this year, so.
I can't see the Braves giving up anything of value for Jabba Chamberlain. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to bringing him in if you can steal him for nothing. But if there's anything in the bullpen that we would, quote, need, it'd be a lefty, and he doesn't fit the bill there. I mean, we have right now it's Alex Wood and Luis Avalon. Depending on how you feel about Wood being in the majors, which I'm actually against, but he's been really good in the relief role, so you can't argue too much with it.
With the injuries, I'm fine with Wood being in the bullpen for now. Ideally, he'd be in the minors, like you said. I think he should probably be there, but we're in a position where we're going to try and win the World Series. And
right.
All the things I said about Jabba with his injury history and his contract status, I haven't even talked about how he's pitched this season. That has been terrible. I don't know why people are acting like he's so good. The only thing really good for him is the strikeout rate. He's striking out over nine batters, but he's also walking almost 4.5 for nine innings.
He's got a monster walk rate, and
it's ridiculous. His ERA is over 5, and I wouldn't mention that, but his FIP is also over 5. So it's not like he's just been unlucky. At least it doesn't seem like initially. And he's got a pretty high home run rate as well, as far as letting up homers. So I don't know what the deal is with people wanting Jabba Chamberlain.
He had that one incredible year, and I think it was 2008, where he was like a 3 or 4 win player out of the bullpen, which is ridiculous. But ever since then, it's kind of been disappointment after disappointment.
Yeah, don't buy into the Jabba hype.
Yeah.
But there have been some, like you said, he's a lefty as a pen. There are some relievers that the Braves could get if they wanted to. But really, when I think about the Braves trading for relief pitchers at this point, I just think about our farm system is not really that great right now. We've graduated a lot of players, which is good. Our farm system being bad right now does not mean the team is bad. We've just had such a good farm system that a lot of the players have come up to the bigs, and we've traded a lot of them for players like Justin Upton. What's the other trade I'm blanking on now? Last year for Michael Warren.
Warren, yeah.
Yeah, we've had some good trades and some players that come up. So it's our farm system definitely needs to be improved as we move forward. And so I don't think that leaves a lot of wiggle room as far as trading for players now. But if we're filling the bench for the bullpen, then we definitely have some pieces we can still need. So do you think the Braves need to move for anything at this point? I mean, we're 7 games up in the division, arguably the worst division in baseball at this point. We're doing pretty well. Do you think we need to add anything?
I don't think there's necessarily an automatic move out there for the Braves. I mean, I know Frank Wren's going to just keep his ears open, but I mean, the only spot in the lineup you can really even think about upgrading is third base. And Johnson just keeps hitting. He's obviously not a good fielder in any way, and that's being kind, but that's really the only spot in the lineup you can even think of improving. And then the bench has been fairly solid. If you can get Gattis back on the bench, that would help with the big bat on the right side. And the bullpen has been, like you said, solid. I mean, the only thing I can think of is a lefty out of the bullpen. Just because right now you only have 2, and one of them is Wood, who has never been on the roll before, and he's kind of your long man, too, at the moment. So wouldn't be the worst thing to have a lefty. But other than that, I mean, I can't – as long as the team's healthy, there's not really a hole to speak of. And it doesn't mean the Braves are perfect by any stretch, but I mean, the lineup, realistically, there's nothing you can do with it because you're never going to upgrade anywhere except for third. So
yeah, I agree. For me, if they're going to upgrade anywhere, I can see Wren either getting rid of Reed Johnson, or I don't even know if they can send them down to AAA, but just upgrading Reed Johnson's spot on the bench because he's pretty much useless at this point. We're talking about Reed Johnson, not Chris Johnson, I wasn't clear on that, because Jordan Schaefer pretty much has locked down the fourth outfielder spot, in my opinion. Evan Gattis is a really good right-handed bat off the bench, so if they were going to trade Reed Johnson for like a left-handed power bat off the bench, I could see that being a good move. But yeah, other than that, I think the team's pretty solid right now. There was some talk that Wren might trade for third base, like you mentioned, but really it's hard to justify with the way Chris Johnson's been hitting.
Right, I can't. I guess to address both of those things, the Reed Johnson thing, I couldn't agree more with that. Reed's really is actually a guy I like, but
yeah, his role
is just duplicated now with Gattis and Schaefer. Like the kind of his fourth out, his he had value as a fourth outfielder who was really sort of capable of playing all 3 spots at a pinch, and was his other value was as the right-handed bat against lefties, and both roles have been stolen from him. So I was even making the case that he should have been the one to go when Juan Francisco went.
Definitely.
And that was up for discussion, but you probably can't get a whole lot for Reed. The only thing I guess you could probably shoot for Reed would be a bullpen arm. I can't imagine you getting too much of a legitimate bat for him, especially in the last year of his contract. But
yeah, I don't. If Reed's traded, I don't expect us to get much for him. It's just that's the only spot on the team we get.
Yeah, I agree. And third base, I mean, the only guy on the market right now that's better than Johnson is Chase Headley. And I can't imagine Wren paying the price it would take to get Headley in the middle of the season. So there's really not. I really don't see a move, at least not an obvious one. I mean, I'm sure he's got something up his sleeve. Wren always seems to have something up his sleeve, but there's not an obvious move in my opinion.
Agreed. And also, I wanted to talk about the Brandon Beachy situation. I know on the Facebook page a while back when I was asking about what the readers wanted us to talk about on our next podcast, they said Brandon Beachy. And honestly, I didn't think we'd get a chance to even discuss it because he was supposed to be back a long time before this. But unfortunately, we can't talk about it because he had a setback. Well, I guess that's not fortunate that he had a setback, but
right.
It's fortunate that we're able to discuss it. And the whole time, my thoughts with Vici have been, what's the big rush with people wanting to put him into the rotation when our starters have been pretty dang good this whole year, and he's coming off of an injury? I don't understand why you want to put him straight into the rotation, especially when you've got pitchers that have been doing a great job. I mean, it'd be one thing if there was an obvious candidate to be knocked out of the starting rotation, but that's not the case here. So I feel like he should be worked into the bullpen, which solves our bullpen need. If you think the Reds still have a need in the bullpen, which that's justified. What do you think about VG coming back in his role?
We're pretty much on the same page. I think it was more understandable before the setback. I still wasn't in favor of bumping anyone before the setback, but now that he's already had it, you know, an obvious setback, and this is not a guy that's like an ultra proven commodity. I mean, he's only thrown 237 innings in his career. I mean, that is about, I guess that's a little bit more than one full season. He's been really good, but it's not like you're bringing Tim Hudson back from injury. That somebody, you know exactly what they are.
Exactly. I feel like kind of the same deal with Chris Medlin at some point last year. The only thing people have seen from Brandon Vici was the great year he had in 2012, where he puts up a 2.0 ERA, and that was 81 innings. So.
And even then, like, the peripherals during 2012 basically tell you that he was pretty lucky. I mean,
yeah.
XFIP over 4.
Yeah, his FRP was over like a run and a half higher.
And his strikeout rate was way down from 2011. So
yeah, in 2011 he had a 10.74 K per 9, and in 2012 it was below 8. So the walk rate also jumped. So.
Yeah, so I mean, Beachy is an interesting case anyway because it kind of came out of nowhere as a prospect.
Exactly.
So there's not a whole lot of track record. I mean, I've always liked Beachy. I'm not saying that he can't be good. But there's no obvious place for him, and I heard the guys on from Talking Chop, I guess it's still the Capital Avenue podcast, but
yeah.
Talking about Hudson being the only sort of quote obvious guy to come out, and I can't see Freddie Gonzalez, a Bobby Cox disciple, ever taking Tim Hudson out of the rotation unless he just employs.
Tim Hudson is not going anywhere.
He'd have to have 4 or 5 bad starts in a row to even have to consider.
Really bad. We're talking really bad, not just
him. Yeah.
If he had 4 mass starts in a row, he'd probably still go out there.
I agree.
But yeah, I don't think there should be any. First of all, there should be no rush to get Brandon Vici back. I don't think there's been an outcry for that. And secondly, I don't think at this point we can really pull for Vici and run straight to the starting rotation.
Yeah, I think there's an argument to leave him in the minors, even when he's quote healthy. Make him, you know. See what it looks like for 3 or 4 starts in the minors. We're already into July now. You figure it's really unlikely that the Braves are going to go through the entire season without a single rotation injury, which we already have so far. But it's only July 1. I can't imagine that those 5 guys none of them are going to get hurt at any point. That would be extremely rare. So I have no issue with leaving Beachy in the minors until someone goes down, even. If you don't want to put him in the bullpen and risk having to stretch him back out again,
yeah,
I have no issue with that at all.
I think that's a smart call too. And also, there have been some people that have talked about the Braves potentially trading the pitcher to make room for Vici. Number one, to make room for him, and also because apparently people are under the impression that there are no pitchers available at the deadline, and that we could get a high return on someone like McCollum. Who's going to be his contract's up after this year? So people are really big on trading people right when their contract's going to come up.
Yep.
And I don't. The Braves aren't going to do that for the injury reasons you talked about, and because when a team is competing, you're not going to trade away your assets to get something. You're going to try to win. At least that's what I hope we're going to do. We're in a good chance to have a deep playoff run, in my opinion.
And, absolutely. You never want to deal. You don't trade a starting pitcher just because you have 6. You
exactly. Just, yeah. What is the saying? You can never have too much pitching. That's true.
Every single year.
And also, you can like say the Braves did stretch out Beachy in the minors, and you still have Hudson and Mahomes, who are kind of average pitchers, and then you've got the other three that are doing well. I'm not opposed to bringing Beachy up, putting him in, seeing if he can continue to pitch well in the majors, and then putting Mahomes in the pen. I don't think that's been talked about a lot, but everyone's talking about how we need a lefty. I don't know if Mahomes ever even pitched in the bullpen, but it could be good for the Braves if that was what we had to work with. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the worst. It's not definitely not the worst idea. I just, if without injury, I just can't. I can't see any of the five starters leaving the rotation without injury, unless they're just an implosion. Because even Teherán was the one that you could have seen leaving early in the year, but he's been so good that you can't. And there's no way that Freddie is going to pull out Mahomes or Hudson or Minor, just because they're all, the two of them are veterans, and then Minor's been so good, and that, and with how fantastic Medlin's been for about 5-6 weeks now, there's not a move to make. So I guess Mahomes would be the fifth guy for me at this point, because I think, like I said before about Hudson, there's no way he's coming out, so yeah. Eventually I guess it could be Mahomes, but I don't see it.
Yeah, it's, at this point it's just going to be a waiting game, wait for someone to go down with an injury, someone to implode. But it's a good situation to be in. We've got too many pitchers. I'm not going to complain about that. All right. We've hit on everything I wanted to touch on. Do you have any other topics you want to talk about?
I think that's it. The only thing that I was going to say earlier is that the Braves' schedule is really favorable.
Yeah, coming we've got up. So many games against the Marlins. I saw that tweet.
I was going to say, I think it's 15 more games against the Marlins, which is staggering. I can't even – it makes complete sense to me. Now, once I read it, it made sense to me. But when I saw that, I was – you know, the Marlins, I mean, granted, they're not as bad as they look tonight on the field. But between as many games as we have left with Miami and Philly and New York, we're already through the gauntlet of the schedule for the Braves. And if they can sort of – if they've already have a 7-game lead with the schedule they've had so far, you have to imagine Washington's going to make a run at some point. They're too talented not to make a run. But the schedule really sort of balances that out for Atlanta. So I think – and I also saw today the other thing was – the Braves' 7-game lead is bigger than the other 5 division leads combined.
Yeah, I saw that. Which is cool. I didn't really think it was like as impressive as most people thought. Which maybe I'm just being a downer, but yeah, that was pretty cool.
It's just more of a like, wow, that's interesting. It's not. It doesn't mean anything at all. It's just,
especially since. There was this really good piece, I think it was on Joe Lucia's, I don't know how you say his name, he's with the outside corner on the Bob Union Network. He had this, it was kind of showing graphically teams' leads division by division, and it's really interesting because you look at all of them, and for the most part this year everything's really close, like Brad was saying. But when you get to the NL East, there's like the Braves line up here, and then everything else is like way lower than all the other teams in baseball. So I thought that's kind of cool. But yeah, speaking of the schedule, in September, the last games we have are three at Cubs, 3 against Milwaukee, and then we round it out with 4 against Philadelphia at home. So that's, I like those odds.
Yeah, and the playoff odds, I think the Braves are something like 95% on the playoff odds right now, and I don't put too much stock in that, honestly, but I think even if you take away the 7-game lead in the division, the wild card lead would be even bigger. So I feel pretty comfortable barring disaster, but there is a long way to go. We're only halfway through, and I think people are a little bit too comfortable at the moment. But the one encouraging thing is I don't think the offense has performed to the level that they absolutely could perform. If you look at sort of the stat lines from the first half of the season and go down the list and say who should be quote better than this, you figure that Hayward for sure is better than what he was in the first half. He had a sub 700 OPS in the first half, and you figure B.J. Upton cannot be worse than he was in the first half.
No way.
Ugla probably is who he is at this point.
Yeah, but I was going to say with Ugla, he's got 14 home runs, and he's got a pretty decent on-base. That's all Ugla can give us at this point, then I'm fine. It sucks that we haven't took contact, but hey, he's got a I don't even know what you could call this stat online. It's much easier when you write about it, but a WRC plus.
Yeah,
of 109, which is better than league average, for those who don't know. And he's got a terrible average, but he's got a 330 on base. Yeah,
he's got a
330 on base percentage. He's got some power. Yeah, he walks a lot. So that's, I mean, but yeah, like you said, everyone's pretty much doing what they need to be.
Yeah, man. The moral of the story is there's only the only guy that only two guys that I would say have played up quite above their heads are Chris Johnson's not going to hit 330 for the rest of the season, and obviously the Evan Gattis show.
Yep.
Will probably slow down a bit, but he's also been out for almost 2 weeks now.
Yeah. So. If Gattis be used mainly in a pinch hitting role going forward, that'd be fantastic.
Yep.
Yeah. Also, not really too big on Gattis moving forward as our catcher, but that's going to lead into a whole other discussion. So
we'll table that one for now.
All right. Well, that's cool. To cap this off, I'd just like to shout out the new Braves staff we have on the site.
Absolutely.
If you guys missed it, we kind of had a little merger with the Tomahawk Talking staff. I don't know if you guys are familiar with their site, but they produced a bunch of good content before, and they're going to keep doing that, except it will be brought to you on ATL All Day with Braves editor Eric Graff heading that little division for us. So exciting things moving forward for the site, as always. Any closing thoughts, Brad?
I'll just kind of echo what you said. We're excited to have them on board. It's going to be a lot of Braves content. And then as a result, I know we're going to kind of go do other things too.
Yeah, so definitely.
There'll be more Hawks, more Falcons, more college stuff coming. And yeah. I got a couple things. I think I even have a college piece up for tomorrow about Georgia. So
yeah, I saw that. That's going to be good. Yeah, definitely the new Braves staff does not mean it will be overloaded with Braves content.
Right.
NFL, NBA, college fans, myself and Brad are both going to be writing more about other sports since we've got some guys taking care of the previews, recaps, opinion analyst pieces for the Braves. And also we have another new writer, Drew Wilburn, and he's been doing a bunch of Hawks stuff recently, but I think he's open to writing about all kinds of sports, and he really brings a cool business angle to the table, which is going to be fun to see. You should expect him on the podcast sometime soon as well. As well as some of the guys from the Hawk Talking stuff. All right. Well, it was good talking with you, Brad, and we'll see you all sometime later.
Yes, sir.
All Day Podcast is brought to you by podcastthemes.com.